Hey there, and welcome to Dropping the Hammer with Dan McFadden, presented by the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. I'm Dan McFadden. Back to talk about the Firekeepers Casino 400 at Michigan International Speedway. And don't call it a comeback. With me this week is my former co-host of the show last year, if you were familiar with it at all, Mr. John, I Fight the Law, LaFollette. John, how are you? Welcome back. How's it been?
Thank you, sir. I've been well. I have an update. I no longer fight the law now. I am part of the law. I no longer am a criminal defense attorney. I'm now a prosecutor. So
really?
I switched sides.
You hadn't told me that. I didn't know that.
I thought I did. I apologize. No, I just wanted to be in court a bit more. It's nice. It's nice not having clients. Technically, the state of Indiana is my client, so I don't have people that I have to chase down anymore. So it's a different experience, but it's still something that I've taken a liking to. Been doing it for the last couple months, and happy to be back on Dropping the Hammer.
All right, so yeah, the last time we did this, me and you, God, I don't remember what the last episode was, because I don't think we even got to do it for.
No, we stopped. We stopped like in October of 2022.
Yeah, because
it's been a minute. Now you got the job, right? Yeah,
yeah. But here we are now, after 23 races in the NASCAR Cup Series season, Chris Buescher is your winner of the Firekeepers Casino 400, two wins in a row, John, and he did it in masterful fashion. The last, like, I think 67 laps of this race were under green. And Buescher had to fend off Martin Truex Jr., who clearly had the best car of the day, and did great. And I thought that was a very, very thrilling final stretch of the race. What did you think?
Same. I echo your thoughts as well. Although there was, and this isn't, you know, I think just to kind of get to what Martin Truex said after the race when he was being interviewed on Pit Road. I mean, everyone. Who watched this race knew that Truex had the best car. He was the cream of the crop for this race. But as he seemed disappointed, obviously, because he had such a good car and only to come away in second place. And he said, you know, in so many words, he said, it's really, really hard to pass the leader in clean air. And this is something that's kind of been a reoccurring theme for a couple tracks with this car and the last car. And I got to thinking, and maybe you can help me out with this. Let's say the roles are reversed. Let's say Chris Buescher is the fastest car. Okay. But let's say it's Martin Truex Jr. who's in first, and he's just taking the air off of Chris Buescher. Do we get the same sort of reaction here, or do we get more of the, oh, this car can't race in air, oh, it's too hard to pass, oh man. Because I thought back to when, I forget what track it was, maybe it was Michigan, perhaps it was Phoenix, but there was another race where I believe it was Kevin Harvick had the dominant car. But Joey Logano was in first, and Harvick, for as good as he was, could not get around Logano because Logano simply just took the clean air off of his car. It was just an aero race instead of a speed race. So I wonder, because Chris Buescher, I mean, look, RFK it's a really great story. It's really cool to see that. It's really cool to see this once, you know, storied team that kind of fell behind a bit and now is vaulted back into contention in the Cup Series. And Chris Buescher's this, you know, super unassuming, super likable driver. I wonder if the optics are changed, like if it's Logano or Truex that beats out Buescher, even though Buescher's the faster car, are we still like saying, oh man, what a great race? We're like, oh, that kind of stunk. What do you think?
Well, I know, I think this is, if it was the opposite, I think people will still be saying it's a great race, because this race had like 25 lead changes.
Yes, no, this objectively, like, was a great race for me.
Like, this was the most lead changes at this track since the 25 in 2014. So it had been a minute. So, and I know some of those lead changes, you know, are during green flag pit stops. So you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 guys who only led one lap, and then you have 3 guys who only led like 2. So some of that's under caution or whatever. But no, still, that's a lot of lead changes among 16 different drivers. But like, think about what Martin Truex Jr., like, he's like a very clean driver. He's basically, yes, Mark Martin, when it comes to racing. And, I'm pretty sure there's a number of other drivers who wouldn't have been as graceful. as Truex was in those right. final few laps. Because especially that moment where he finally got to the inside of Buescher and got loose right there. Like, I'm sure there's someone else who would just shifted up into Buescher and then just tried to run.
Right. Do you not to necessarily pick on this driver, but like I could absolutely see Ross Chastain doing that. or even Denny Hamlin. I could see Denny Hamlin doing it too.
Yeah.
And again, and that's just the nature of the beast of NASCAR now. I wouldn't necessarily say that would have been a dirty move. To your point, you're right. Truex definitely seemed like he knew that he was beaten, especially after he got so close. Yeah. On that one, I forget how many laps there were left. I think it was like 8 laps or something to go. And I think it was Michael McDowell got in the way there a little bit, being a lap car. And Truex tried to send it into one and got squirrely and backed out and saved his car. But it was a very good race. I wish it would have been it all would have gotten in on Sunday just for the optics of TV, because the crowd there looked great. And then just to have it get rained out and only be at half capacity or whatever it was on Monday is kind of a bummer. But
did you see like the tweet that someone like sent had going around showing all of the NASCAR events, both practice, qualifying, racing, that have been affected by rain this year?
I did see that, where something like only like eight, there's only been 8 races this year or something that have not been affected by weather.
Like I tweeted before, like right when the race was starting, right, we went 2 straight weeks without rain, guys. Good job. Good effort.
So it's your fault. You're the instigator here. I remember I was at the Chicago Street Race and it hadn't rained there in like a month. And then the day of the race, they get record-setting rainfall. It's like NASCAR
historic,
just cannot.
Historic,
yes.
Historic.
Yeah. NASCAR just can't catch a break here. It just seems like one of those years. For what it's worth, I'll be at the race in Indy on Sunday. It's only supposed to be a high of 80 and sunny. So maybe the weather gods will smile on the Indianapolis road course one last time. And if you're NASCAR, what do you do? You can't control it. This is just the nature of the beast. It's one of those years. But good thing the racing's been excellent this year, by and large, the racing has really been something that NASCAR could sell.
And the racing has been really good for RFK Racing. This is their second win in a row with Chris Buescher. This is the first time RFK Racing has had back-to-back wins since Carl Edwards did it in the final two races of the 2010 season.
Where were you in 2010?
November 2010, I would have been in sophomore in college.
I think I would have been my third year of college. I was probably getting ready to go see Tangled in theaters that Thanksgiving. That's that's how far back that was.
This is the first time the 17 car has gone back to back since 2009, when Matt Kenseth won the Daytona 500 and then went to Auto Club and went back to back.
And so, I think it's really cool that it happens to Chris Buescher. I mean, he's someone who, like I said, he's a really understated figure, doesn't necessarily get a lot of attention. This is what, only his fourth Cup Series win, correct?
Yeah.
But he's, how many starts does he have? I mean, he's been in the series for a long time.
Since 2015, 2016, yeah.
Yeah, and he's someone who seems to be capable of winning at any sort of variety of tracks. And I think it's really neat to see a guy who is stuck out, who stuck with RFK before it was RFK, before Brad Keselowski came aboard. Mm-hmm. Because those were some real lean years for that team. And it's really neat to see a talented driver who may or may not have had the best equipment stick it out. And here he is, and he's in the thick of the championship race now, which is really fun to see. It's really cool to see, like I said, someone who has paid their dues really get what was coming to him.
280 starts. That's where Chris Buescher is at right now. Think about how many starts he had in between the first one in 2016 at Pocono versus last year at Bristol. I mean, it was, I believe, 222 starts, which was a lot. And now he has 3 in 2 years, and which is funny. All 3 of those wins have come in races where RFK rate, or okay, 2 of the 3, I guess. Brad Keselowski wasn't exactly dominant. He did lead 15 laps. But all 3 of those wins have been in races where RFK was dominant and in contention for the most part.
Right, and I apologize. I forgot that he used to race for JTG Doherty, excuse me, back in the day. But either way, the teams he's raced for are Front Row Motorsports, JTG Doherty, Roush Fenway before Brad Keselowski came in, and now RFK. I mean, those aren't, you know, Hendricks, Penske's, Gibbs. I mean, this is someone who, you know, even if I got, you know, the overall arc of his career off a little bit, like I said, this is someone who still has raced for teams of limited fund, limited means. The best he's ever finished in point standings is 16th. And that was back in 2016 with Front Row Motorsports.
When he made the playoffs because he won a race.
Yes. And since then, he's finished 25th, 24th, 20th, 21st, 19th. And even last year, first year at RFK, he only finished 21st.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is just really sort of just a recent trend for this team and for Buescher. Yeah, but like I said, it's well-deserved.
Yeah, he has five top fives now, which exceed his previous career high of three, which he set last year. And he has 10 top 10s, which also matches his career high from last year. But no, if you think about it, Chris Buescher beating Martin Truex Jr. for the wins is kind of poignant because they both have had similar careers or trajectories. They both had that one win in their rookie or second year and then nothing for a very long time. And then you go back to the right team that you need to go to, and then things start slowly building up. So they got very, very similar driving styles, very similar trajectories. So I think that's, you know, a very appropriate race finish for those two.
There was some talk on the broadcast just talking about how great of a day RFK was having and really the hot streak they've been on. I think Brad Keselowski finished fourth. They had both cars in the top five. You know, it was a really strong day overall for them. There was some talk in the booth about how this is a comeback for Ford. And I don't think it's necessarily a comeback for Ford. And maybe you can disagree with me on this, but it just seems like this is a resurgence of RFK. To me, it seems like the rest of the Ford manufactured teams seem to be out on an island.
Penske has two wins with Logano and Blaney.
And I was just looking at this. What is Ryan Blaney won the Coke 600, and here's what he's done since then: 6th, 31st, 36th, 33rd, 9th, 22nd, 30th, 14th, and 9th. I mean, and then we'll look at Joey Logano. I mean, he won in Atlanta, but just to kind of go, we'll do the same span that we did with Blaney. We'll go from the Coke 600 onward. 21st, 3rd, 3rd, 19th, 8th, 17th, 2nd, 35th, 4th, 14th.
No, I mean the
a couple strong runs, but a lot of inconsistencies, no wins.
Yeah.
And then same with Kevin Harvick, who I believe in just the overall point standings, he's in top 5, I think, but hasn't got a win this year.
Yeah.
He's really been the only driver of consequence at Stuart Haas this year. The other drivers, I think, are all below. Here's a question for you. Who is the highest scored points driver right now for Stuart Haas Racing?
Is it not Kevin Harvick?
I mean, outside of Kevin Harvick, excuse me. Outside of Kevin Harvick.
Oh, okay.
So any Stuart Haas driver not named Kevin Harvick, who's the highest pointed driver right now? Who has the most points?
Let's go Almirola?
It's Almirola. He's 24th. Wow. Priest is 25th, and Chase Briscoe is 31st. He's 31st.
Wow.
Like, it's like RF, like not RFK, excuse me. Stuart Haas has really nothing to show outside of Kevin Harvick this year. And then, you know, I know Kevin Harvick's retiring, and that's a great story to see all the, you know, accolades and all the well wishes for him as he goes off into his next part of his career. But, you know, Josh Berry's taking over the number four next year. I like Josh Berry. It's a good story, but it's not like he's setting the Xfinity series on fire. So what's that team gonna look like next year? I think that Ford still has a way to go. Like,
no, you're right, but the whispers started last weekend about whether it after Buescher won it, are you guys the best Ford team? And then 1 week later, it's again the RFK guys up front.
Yeah, it's not a question of are they the best Ford team. It's like, are they the only Ford team?
Yeah.
It sounds funny saying that, but like right now, they are the only Ford team. I mean, you can never count out the Penske's, obviously, because of their pedigree, but like, they're just as inconsistent as some of the other Ford teams right now, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So this was a big win for Brad Keselowski as a team owner.
Yes.
First win at his home track because he is from Michigan. So we got some video and audio from Brad about the significance of this win and what it kind of means at the moment. So here's Brad Keselowski.
Lee Spencer, catchfence.com. I've known you for a long time, but, you know, I've got a lot of respect for you, but could you have imagined coming into this season and pulled off what you did? I mean, I can't imagine what Jack must be thinking seeing the 17 in victory lane 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, you know, the highs are high and the lows are low over here. We had a lot of lows last year, and, you know, it's nice to have these high marks. You know, I don't take them for granted. They mean more to me, probably because of how big a struggle last year was for both teams, and probably even more specifically for me. And, you know, I'm thrilled for it. You know, I know the work that goes into it, and on all aspects, I'm thrilled for, you know, every department of our company, from the marketing side through all of competition. And, you know, we've come so far. We still have a long ways to go to get to where I want us to be. But we're building some really strong momentum with these wins. And, you know, I'm just as curious as anyone else to see where it goes from here. I try not to have expectations for good or bad. I just try to do our best and see what that plays out to on the field.
I mean, it's not just one car, it's two, so it's not a fluke.
Yeah, I mean, both cars the last 2 weeks have been, you know, exceptionally strong. And, you know, I felt like Chris was a little better than I was last week and executed at a really high level and knocked it out of the ballpark with a win. And this weekend, I think I was probably just a little bit faster, and the race went his way, and he executed really well. So, you know, that's what it takes. And the 19 car was Martin Truex, no slouch, I can tell you that. I'm sure you guys already talked to him, but he was a rocket most of the day, and for Chris to be able to hold him off is really impressive.
Anyway, let's go back to Chris Buescher real quick. Like we said, like he's been with Roush since he was basically 15, since he was a 15-year-old development driver. He won the 2015 Xfinity Series title. So it seems like just now he's finally reaping. Like he was at Front Row for a little bit. He was at JTG for a little bit, basically on loan both times, but he finally came back into his home last year. Was it last year or 2020?
2020 was his first year at Roush.
All right. So Chris Buescher, he's now back under the house at Roush and coincides with the arrival of Brad Keselowski. And so Chris Buescher has seen a lot at Roush. He has seen the lows and he has seen the highs, and he addressed that Monday after his win. So here's Chris Buescher talking about what it's been like to see this resurgence at RFK Racing the last couple of years.
And it's like any profession, right? You're constantly learning and trying to figure out how to be better. And, you know, we've been through a lot of years of doing that and trying to keep developing, but also, you know, with everybody around us right now and the improvements that we've had, it's just elevating everything all at the same time. So, it's been a very short period of time and also an eternity at the same time. So, you know, think back to the same point, you know, 15 years ago, Roush was dominating. And that was 8 or 9 wins on a season, you know, competing for championships and knowing that, you know, this was going to be a great place to go win races as you continue to build up through your career, right? And you know, fast forward a handful of years later, and it's kind of that time where Roush had gotten to probably its low point, and it had been that steady climb from there. And like Scott was saying, the expectations for a little while was, look, we're in a bad spot, we know it, we need to be 10 spots better. Well, 10 spots better was only 15th at the time, and yeah, you look back at it now, it's like, man, that was, you know, you're looking for those steps, but we needed to take a massive step and a big swing. And I think that's where, you know, with some of Brad's direction and some of the rebranding within RFK as a group, and I think that's been the investment, is to say our expectation is not to get 5 spots better. It is to win races and to compete for championships. And and the investment's there, the people are there. You know, everything is behind it to get us to that point, and you know, we're starting to reap some of the rewards from that right now. But We also have a lot of racing left to go this year. So, like I said, momentum is something that I kind of I didn't believe in it for a long time. My career didn't really feel like that was a real thing, and I was wrong. I was certainly wrong. I feel like you see it more now, and just to know that this next gen car won, it's probably a little bit more similar across some racetracks than the old cars, but also it certainly goes a long way. When you think about what Richmond is to Michigan, and you lay those tracks over each other, not even in the same ballpark, right? And to be able to sit here for 2 weeks in a row at both those places, that's in my mind the biggest accomplishment over the last two. It's not just that it's two in a row, but that it's two drastically different racetracks.
John, what do you think about, like, so this kind of started basically with the Daytona duels last year, when RFK swept the duels. Like, oh boy, here comes RFK. And then they didn't do anything until the Bristol Night Race, which they both dominated until Buescher won. And then Buescher has shown a lot of promise on, like, road courses, specifically like at Sonoma the last 2 years. He's been right there. Brad Keselowski has said that he thought that he didn't think the team as a whole would probably win at either Richmond or Michigan, but that Buescher himself could, like, really show up at Indianapolis. So what have you thought of the RFK resurgence under the new co-ownership of Brad Keselowski?
I think it's great for NASCAR. This is the same team that guys like Mark Martin used to race for.
Yeah.
And didn't Matt Kenseth race for the team when he won his championship too?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this isn't like Trackhouse or 2311, although those teams, those who have listened to this show enough, at least when I've been on, we both admire those teams and what they're doing. But, like, this isn't like some recent new upstart. This is a team with history.
Yeah.
And it's always important, especially for a sport like NASCAR, to have those historic teams stay around. Like, I wish that Robert Yates Racing was still around, or some of those other teams from the 90s. It's nice to see Kyle Busch bring Richard Childress up a level and have that team contending again. It's great for the, it's just like, for the NFL, it's great for the NFL when the Cowboys are doing well. Mm-hmm. It's also great when the Cowboys aren't doing well, because people are always talking about the Cowboys, but you get what I mean. Like, it's good for the NBA when the Celtics and Lakers are good. Like, it's good for a sport that has its historic teams and its notable teams, doing well. And also, especially, it's just great also because you can just get some years where it's just like NASCAR feels like Formula One, like 2020. It was just the Kyle Larson show. It's just like, it's nice to see variety and flavor, and adds this whole other level of expectations or unexpectedness or surprise, I should say, to a race, but especially with Roush Fenway Keselowski. Like I said, this isn't just some random startup team. This is a team with a pedigree, and it's cool to see that pedigree come back to this team, because that's what really helps make NASCAR so intriguing and so vital to a lot of its fans.
And gotta remember, this is a team that at one point had like five cars in the garage of the Cup Series. They were just the powerhouse, and then it just, like, slowly over time just sunk. With the departures of Carl Edwards, Matt Kenseth, Greg Biffle. I mean, I think it was when it was five cars. You had, like, Jamie McMurray in there.
Oh yeah.
I wish I could write a book about NASCAR, about the decline of NASCAR over the course of the 2010s, and then its attempts at a resurgence, and use Roush Fenway Racing as, like, the backbone of that story, because I think that's very reflective of the trajectory of NASCAR over, like, the last 13 years.
Right. Yeah. They're certainly emblematic of it, for sure. Definitely.
So, how would you grade the Firekeepers Casino 400?
in terms of what? Was it a good race pull?
Yeah.
I haven't even voted yet. I've been really doing really well this year about voting every week when I can. I mean, I would I mean, there's no way that race gets below an 80, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'd say it's like an 85.
Yeah.
What's it at right now?
I have no idea. No clue. Haven't looked. Haven't voted. But now, I mean, that was such a good. Michigan is now like a driver's track.
Yes.
And it wasn't for a very long time.
Yes.
Like it was that track where you're like, oh, God, Michigan, can we just get through this? Can we? And then, like, the last 2 years, it's been like, oh yeah, this is what that was like.
Yeah, the new car is great on tracks like this. I just voted yes in the Gluck poll, and as of now, it's an 86.6 for yes, so it's effectively 87%, which makes sense. You know, they only go to Michigan once, correct?
Yeah.
Should they do it twice?
Nope.
You're right. Nope. You're right. You're right. There's always the temptation to want to do it twice when the racing is good, but you're right. More is less.
Kansas shouldn't have two races. The racing at Kansas has been phenomenal the last 2 years. It shouldn't have two races.
I agree.
Just because of the crowds aren't coming. Like,
I agree. And the crowd in Michigan was good this year, right? Like, didn't they say on the broadcast that like there were more people at Michigan in the last like 9 years or something?
I'm not sure, but like, I believe the infield sold out for like the second year in a row, I think.
Okay, cool. Okay. Well, I mean, that's encouraging. So. This new car just crushes tracks like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Michigan's become a must see after being a snooze fest. And it's really, I wish they could figure out the short track package too. So,
yeah.
But that's a conversation for another day.
All right. So before we move on to our brief news section, we got some more audio from Brad Keselowski. He did some media today for the SRX racing series, which we haven't really talked about on this podcast at all. We just haven't got around to it. But Brad Keselowski is the only active cup driver who's racing full time in the series, which was started by Tony Stewart 2 years ago. And he's been in all the races. And during that time, during the four races so far, during this stretch, Brad Keselowski has finished sixth or better in four of the five cup races. And when Brad Keselowski announced that he was going to be in the SRX season, he said he was doing it because he wanted just one more seat time. Because of the limited seat time that you get in a cup car these days. And so during this availability, I asked him if there were any correlations between his results in the cup over the last month or so and his time in SRX. And here's his answer. First, Brad, when it was announced that you were going to be doing the full season of SRX, you said it was primarily because you really wanted to have more seat time, given that you have so much less seat time on the NASCAR side. So I was curious, especially over the last like five races, you finished six or better on the cup side. So do you think there's been any correlation between what you've been doing at SRX and cup?
Yeah, Daniel, honestly, I do. You know, I ran the Richmond race here, not this past weekend, but the weekend before, and that coincided with running in Motor Mile. And, you know, I feel like just getting in that rhythm of running races, I'm probably more of a rhythm person than I'd like to admit. And when that rhythm gets disrupted and you're not racing enough, I personally lose confidence. I want the seat time. I want the reps. And I know the cars don't drive the same and we're not at the same tracks, but it's still racing and I want to race. So, you know, you see guys like Kyle Larson out there running 3-4 times a week. You know, I think Kyle Busch, you know, a lot of late model racing. And obviously he did SRX the last 2 weeks. And these guys are getting a lot of reps. And I think there's a lot to be said for that.
So Brad Keselowski said, absolutely, it's helped. So what did you think about his answer? What could Keselowski say about being a rhythm driver?
You tell me what that means. And I don't mean that in like a negative. I don't mean that. Like, I'm genuinely, because like to me, I can't comprehend like what rhythm in a race car means, because I've never done it. Like, and it's easy to understand when it's like basketball or football, or there's like, you can actually see athletes going through like physical motions, mm-hmm. but, and I'm not saying what NASCAR drivers don't do is hard, because it is hard. I think they're athletes. You tell me what rhythm means to a NASCAR driver, because I'm a NASCAR layman. I'm just a meager criminal defense attorney, I'm just a meager criminal attorney now. You tell me what that means, because I don't know what that means.
But that's the title of this episode, meager criminal defense attorney.
Because to me, I know that, like, bare bones, they're turning left and going fast, but, like, what is the actual rhythm that you stay in between SRX and NASCAR?
I think maybe being in a racing mindset
on that makes sense.
Regular basis, like you said, the Richmond corresponded with, like, the Motor Mile. So,
okay,
I think those are, like, Richmond's probably it's the only track that really corresponds to the tracks that they've been racing on at SRX. But I think, yeah, no, I think it's just being in that mindset, using your tools on a regular basis. And that, like you said, you know, Kyle Larson is racing all the time.
True. Yeah, for
like,
sure.
And when Brad was racing in the Xfinity series, and, you know, when he was double dipping, he was winning a lot more in the Cup series.
So let's say that Brad Keselowski is a relief pitcher and SRX is the bullpen, and he that's where he stays loose, and that's where he gets warmed up. Is that a good way of analogy?
Maybe. Yeah, I like that. No.
Welcome to Thursday Night Thunder with SRX, the bullpen of racing.
No, during the week he goes, yeah, SRX is like he goes down to like a single A baseball team. Just for sure.
I'm bummed that they're not coming to Indy. They came to Indy their first year. They haven't come back since. Yeah, I'd like to go. I'd like to see him. I just didn't get a chance to see him that first year.
I can't believe they didn't go back to Slinger after the first year. The race that Marco Andretti won.
Oh,
that race was amazing. I was like, how did they not go back there?
Because Tony Stewart didn't win. He's like, screw this. If I can't win, I'm not going back. No, I'm joking. It's neat to see Brad doing well, especially, you know, I mean, let's not forget, I mean, how big of a risk he took leaving Penske.
Oh yeah. He's looking good now.
He's looking great now. And last year he finished 24th in points, just a really forgettable season for him. And, you know, look, it was his first year as an owner driver, a lot more responsibility going on, but, you know, he left. He was already, I think what also helped make that decision was, like, Brad already knew that he was, you know, his legacy was already cemented. Everything, I mean, he was already going to be a NASCAR Hall of Famer before he left Penske. Everything he does now is just gravy. But I think it's, I mean, gosh, how vindicating does it have to be for him to be doing this on his own?
Oh, absolutely. And one thing when it comes to, like, the resurgence of RFK Racing, Scott Graves, he said in the post-race press conference on Monday that, you know, a few years ago, the shop itself at Roush, he said, you probably wouldn't want to, like, take pictures of it and, like, put it out in the world. Like, it wasn't, like, you know, the best. And when Keselowski, you know, first arrived as an owner, like he said, he walked into the shop. It was like, oh, this needs to change. Like, they repainted everything and, like, spick and span. And Graves said that, like, you know, really helps, you know, attitude and stuff like that. It helps flow through that.
Yeah, if the higher ups care, then that trickles down.
And looking at the playoff picture, Brad Keselowski is 14th on the playoff grid, plus 168.
Yes.
So I don't think there's going to be four different new winners over the next, you know, four races who are contending for points. I don't think so.
Are there four races left or three races? I thought they had Indy Road Course, Watkins Glen, and Daytona. Is that it? So we got three races left.
You might be right.
But either way, point being, like, there's not going to be near the amount of winners next year, just because they've run out of real estate.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right. Indianapolis, Watkins Glen, Daytona. Yeah, there's only three. So yeah, there's not going to be four new winners.
No.
Are
there any new winners? I mean, it gets dicey because you've got the road course ringers, and then you've got Daytona, which anything can happen at Daytona.
Yeah. Points paying wise, no. But I'm leaving open the possibility for a run course winner. So,
Yeah.
but hey, man, Chase Elliott, he's desperate right now.
Yeah, I mean, he
So
any
you,
all I mean his awful Michigan race just
yeah.
killed all the momentum. Like there was a
Yeah.
legit chance he probably could have pointed his way in, maybe if some things broke his way. Now it's win or bust. I mean, good thing that he's good at road courses, right? He's got back-to-back shots here. And obviously he's won at Watkins Glen before. I don't know his history at the Indy Road Course. I can check that out real quick, but I mean
Well, he hasn't won a road course in the NextGen era. Everyone
it's true.
wants to keep saying, "Oh, he's great on road courses." Yeah, under the previous car. So, but yeah.
Let's look up what he's done at Indy Road Course real quick. Bear with me just a moment. Indy Road Course. Last year he finished 16th. Year before that he finished 4th. So
Again, that was not NextGen car.
that was not the next gen car. So wait and see. I mean, but again, he's a champion. He's a former champion. He races for Hendrick. So those two things, you make
Yeah.
him, you give him the benefit of the doubt. But I mean, he certainly knows it's not going to be easy. It's not easy to go out here and win, especially you look at some of the road course ringers that they're going to be at Indy. You got
We'll get into our Indy preview. We'll get
I mean,
into
that
that real
is
quick.
stacked. It is
I know, I
stacked.
know,
I'm really
I know.
excited.
Okay, so all right, let's go to our brief news segment. Talk about the big news of the week. Here's our news roundup. So, John, if you had asked me 3 weeks ago after Martin Truex Jr. Won at, where was that? Won at New Hampshire. And he got his first win at his third home track. If Martin Truex Jr. was coming back in 2024, I would have said, no. I did say no. I said I didn't believe he was. Because when you're talking about buying a boat, finally buying a boat, I'm like, I think I said I think he's committed. He knows he's retiring. He just doesn't want to say it out loud. That was my answer. But here he comes into the Michigan Media Center on Saturday and says, "I'm coming back." The same way he did it last year. The same way he did it at Nashville. He just after weeks of, "Is Truex going to come back?" He just walks into the media center and says, "Are you coming back?" "I'm coming back," which is just so Truex. That's just him. That's just him.
You know, at this point, he's playing with house money. I mean,
Yeah.
he's a favorite to win the championship. And I'm sure it doesn't hurt when Bass Pro Shops waves a big check in your face and says, "Are you sure? You sure you want to buy that boat? You can buy more boats if you race one more year." I mean, why not? I'm sure if he was having like, say, if he was having like, given how, like you said, when you're talking about buying a boat, you're definitely considering retirement seriously.
Yeah.
I wonder how thin the margin for error here was. Like,
I know.
say that he's even having like a Kevin Harvick season. Like, not a bad season, but he's just not winning. Like, he's
Yeah.
just like there's definitely a cap on what that team and what that car can do. Does he call it a career? Does he say, "Eh, this isn't fun anymore?" But you know, he's got 3 wins,
Yeah.
13 top tens. He's racing for one of the better teams in the series.
Leading the
He's one of
point.
the,
Leading the
yeah,
point.
elite. Yeah, and
Leading the point.
he's one of the favorites to win, and he
Yeah.
could be a two-time Cup
Yeah.
Series champion possibly.
I believe he said Saturday, why ruin a good thing?
I mean, he's
So.
not, everything is trending his way, so why not just let the good times roll and then just see what happens next year? I really do wonder. I mean, like a bad year for Truex, like what that would mean for him. Like, I bet you if he's having a Kevin Harvick type season.
Last year didn't make
Yes.
the
Yeah. Like otherwise, yeah, exactly. Like otherwise was had a good year.
Didn't
Like it wasn't like
win,
he had a
didn't
bad
make
year.
fun.
He didn't win any races though, but he still
Yeah.
finished what? Like I think regular season points, he finished what, like 5th or 3rd? Like he
Fourth,
yeah. He had a
something like that.
strong
Yeah.
season, just
Yeah.
not a great year. I wonder if he even just repeated that. I wonder if he calls it quits. But I mean, like I said, he's playing with house money. Why not? Why
Yeah.
not roll it back? Especially if Bass Pro Shops is going to fork over a lot more money to have you do it. Money
So,
talks.
But also, if I'm Martin Truex Jr., like I finally won at my home track in New Hampshire. The only other thing I got to cross off is winning at a super speedway.
Yeah,
that's the only thing he has left.
Yeah,
he's won on everything. Like I mean, he won on super speedways in Xfinity Series. All right, but when it comes to the Cup
Series, but the Cup Series,
like that's the only thing he's got left.
Yeah, he's a half thing. Car length, not even half car. He's like a third of a car length away from winning the Daytona 500.
No, he was like inches.
A nose. Yeah,
yeah, it was that close. It's ridiculous. Yeah. But no, like I'm sure there's other stuff he wants to like check off. But I'm sure he also wants to get that super speedway win.
He still hasn't gotten that Martinsville hot dog, darn it.
Wait, I thought he won there.
No, I'm just being okay. Facetious. It's another thing he wants to it's another thing he wants to mark off. Oh, I still haven't gotten that hot dog. I gotta do one more year just to get the hot dogs. Like, you know, you can just show up and just
I gotta win it.
I've gotta win it.
But Martin, they don't give that out as a trophy. No, don't care.
You heard what I said. Where's the pen? I'm signing.
I want a grandfather clock full of hot dogs.
Yeah, that's why he's coming back. The hot dogs inside of a grandfather clock. Oh, now I'm just mad that this won't happen. What if he wins Martinsville next year? And like he gets the grandfather clock, but like you and I are just texting each other, like there's no hot dogs. We're just gonna be bummed.
Where are the grandstands? They're like, where are the hot dogs?
People are just staring at us, like, what are these guys? Tourists.
Martin Truex Jr. He's coming back in 2024, so we can all put that to bed. Now it all falls down to Eric Almirola. Are you coming back or not, buddy? Just. Come on.
Is it even his decision? Does like Stuart Haas even want him back?
They'll take his sponsorship money.
I mean, yeah, for sure. But like just in a vacuum, if it's just completely, we're just going results based. Like if we injected, I don't even know if we would need to give Tony Stewart truth serum because he's always so forthright and honest. But like if you just remove the money from the equation, we're just talking strictly results. I mean, he's 24th in points. I mean, I know Michael McDowell's been it's like an open secret that McDowell's possibly the replacement.
McDowell, freaking, he's earning it as far as I'm.
Oh, for sure. No, he's, like, yeah, I mean, McDowell's had.
He's in contention for the playoffs and he hasn't won.
Yeah. Yeah, he's only 3 points out with three races to go. I mean, and look, he's won. He's great on road courses and he's won at Daytona. Yeah. So it's not without their own possibility that he could win his way in. That's absolutely something that could happen.
He had a car to win at Sonoma. So yeah, if I'm them, I'm taking that car to either Indy or Watkins Glen.
Right. I could absolutely see Mick. I mean, yeah, if you're just looking at results and not obviously everything else that has to be factored in, I mean, yeah, why wouldn't you want McDowell over Almirola?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So that's really the only other shoe we're kind of waiting to drop, right? On silly season is whether Almirola is coming.
Yeah, I think so. Cause it seems like everything else is pretty much solidified.
All right. So that's it for the news of the week. Time for our preview of the third annual NASCAR Cup Series race on the Indianapolis road course.
I'm excited. I'm like the only one who's like seems to still be excited for the Indy road course race.
If you take out the craziness of turn one, if you take out the speed bump issues from the first time,
yeah,
if you take that out, good races. They've been great.
I agree. Although now that with the new way that they're doing stages for road courses where there's no brakes, I do wonder if this is going to get a little strung out. And because like if you watch, especially people who watch IndyCar races on the road course, they will know they know that it's a fine track for IndyCar. It's not their best, not their most compelling, because this was a track that was designed for Formula One. This was not meant for IndyCar and NASCAR. So it's definitely a track where guys can get spread out very fast and where there's not really a lot of passing zones. You've got, I think it's turn one definitely, and what, turn like six, and that's really about it. So I am curious to see if this ends up being a snooze fest. I hope it's not. I really hope he gets some good racing, because the last 2 years, I think, have been fun. I know that it's got its, this race has had its haters. But we'll see. We'll see.
If you take out Ross Chastain's bonsai move into the exit route, and then just viewing that race at the end between Cindric, Reddick, and Chastain. Technically, Chastain wasn't involved because of what he did. But if you just look at that in a vacuum, that was very exciting racing.
Yeah, like, it is.
It was so good.
And even the Xfinity series has had good races. I remember the first year that they did it with that really awesome race. I think it was between Cindric and Briscoe, right? Where Briscoe ultimately got the win. It was 2019 because Xfinity ran the road course a year before the Cup Series did. I mean, Xfinity series has had some good races there. And like I've said, the real way to solve this issue is just move Cup Series to IRP or Lucas Oil that it's called now. But given the short track package, I don't know if that's quite the answer. I do hope that they go back to the oval next year. I'm curious just because this is a new car and I want to see what the new car can do. I'm a little dubious, but it's put on a decent show at Pocono, and that's the most analogous track that Indianapolis has on the oval, at least, is Pocono, just because it's got the long straightaways with the flat with the flat corners. Pocono's been decent with the new car. I think that it could do it at Indy. Why not?
Yeah, but they're doing a test. They're doing a tire test on the oval next week.
Mean they're not going to repeat 2008? God.
But no, they're doing a tire test next week with Briscoe, Ty Gibbs, and Alex Bowman, and Bob Pockers tweeted earlier today, if they're doing a tire test on the oval, it's probably very, very likely they're going back to the oval. And Denny Hamlin said, like on Saturday, very confidently, we're going back to the oval.
Right, and he said that on his podcast, like on his first or second episode. And also, next year's the 30th anniversary of the inaugural Brickyard, where Jeff Gordon won. It just, all the signs are pointing, obviously, that it's going to go back to the oval, which, you know, like I said.
Will people show up, though? That's...
Yeah, people will show up. I mean, look, it's the Indianapolis Motor Speedway is different from every other NASCAR track, is because NASCAR is not the main draw there. It's the Indy 500. The Indy 500 draws over 200,000 grandstand spectators every year. This year, I think, had the most. This year's 500 was the most attended 500 since 2016, and that was the 100th running of the Indy 500. So they're not going to be like every other NASCAR track. They don't have the luxury of these other NASCAR tracks where they can take out stands to compact everyone in to make it look better, because they're going to play second fiddle to IndyCar here, and they always will. But that being said, I mean, they still can draw, what, 40, 50,000? Which for a NASCAR, race isn't terrible. I'd wager it's more people than show up at Kansas.
Probably.
Or Richmond.
I'm hoping the goodwill with the next-gen car has generated on oval tracks means more people will show up rather than
for sure. And also just going back to the oval in general. I mean, there's a lot of people who want the race to go back to the oval because, you know, they think the oval puts on better racing, even though I would point to every Brickyard since 2008. People have short memories, but this is a new car. And I really hope if the new car does well on the oval, then so be it. I'd be all for it. If it goes back to not putting on a great show at all, look, Indianapolis and the Indiana market in general, there's a lot of race fans here.
Yeah.
Not just IndyCar, but also NASCAR. They've got to find some way to make it work.
It was in the top 4-5 markets for the Chicago race.
Yes.
Like a lot. Like, I mean, it was the next over market from Chicago.
Yes. No, there's a lot of, this is a huge hotbed of racing. And, you know, we have the US Nationals here for drag racing. Yeah. You know, it's there's a ton of short tracks in this state. It is a racing state. Basketball and auto racing are the biggest, I would say, sports in this state. There's a market for it. NASCAR's got to find a way to make it work. And I really hope the next gen car does well on the oval. I really hope it does. I want to see it succeed because I want to see NASCAR stay here.
Yeah, I do too. So are you going to the truck race Friday night?
Yes, I'm doing all four. going to the truck race in ARCA. Going to cheer for my boy Freddie Muniz, knock on the middle during the ARCA race.
Did you say Freddie Muniz?
Frankie. I'm so sorry. He's my boy, though. I'm cheering for Frankie Muniz, knock on the middle. I'll be cheering for him, and then I'll be the truck race, and then the doubleheader on Saturday. I'll be at the cup race on Sunday. So,
all right. So, you brought up road course ringers. So let's this phenomenon is phenomena. Phenomena. Oh, we got 10 minutes. All right. So yes, it's a stacked field of road course specialists headlined by Mr. Shane Van Gisbergen, who is, after his historic win at the Chicago Street Course, is coming back for round two with Trackhouse Racing, which is Kyle Busch says he's gonna be the favorite. Then we got Jenson Button, former Formula One champion, coming back for his third NASCAR start. He's doing
Who has raced on that road course before in F1?
Yep, he's doing that with Rick Ware Racing. Then you have Kamari Kobayashi, who's making his NASCAR debut with 2311 Racing.
Yes.
And I believe he's a 24 hours of Daytona winner.
Yes, he's a sports car racer. He's won the 24 hour race at Daytona a couple times with Wayne Taylor Racing. Yes, he's an expert race car driver.
Okay, and then we have another, like Shane Van Gisbergen. He's an Australian supercar V8 racer. We have Brody Kostecki, driving the number 33 for RCR. So you get two of those Australian guys in this race. So I'm very interested in the heads up factor right there. That's like, I'm interested in that. But also I kind of feel bad for Brody, because he makes this deal with RCR that's announced. And then like within I think there's a few days, SVG announces, yep, come back. It's like, oh man. Oh,
every time news of SVG comes up, I always think of Logano's post-race interview at Chicago, where he's like, Van Ginsburg, Van Hamburger, whatever his name is, I don't know, he's fast, that's all I know. Like, I just want to call him Hamburger now. He's like, I'm up his hamburger, Van Gin. I don't know how to say his name. I just know he's fast. It's so good. Logano has become one of like my new favorite drivers now, after that and the whole thing of him yelling at the guys at Pocono trying to hook him up. I won't go into detail, but man, just super relatable moments from Joey Logano. So I'm coming around to Mr. Joey. It's a stacked field. And
there's one more. We got Mike Rockenfeller, who will be driving the number 42 for Legacy Motor Club in the place of the suspended Noah Gragson. He is the guy. He was one of the two guys. Him and Jenson Button were part of the Garage 56.
Oh yeah, project. They're part of the Le Mans prototype project. Yeah, yes, yes,
they were,
cool.
They were teammates with Jimmy Johnson.
Great.
So that'd be cool to see. So for 2 years ago, everyone said, you know, the road course ringers era was dead, and now it's back in full force, like quickly.
Yeah, and it's not just like Boris said anymore. Yeah. It's world renowned race car drivers. No shade to Boris said, but like, like these are guys with like world renowned pedigrees coming here. And you know, also I think it helps the fact that, you know, it's Indianapolis Motor Speedway. I mean, there's prestige for winning here. Mm-hmm. I mean, even though the attendance figures are down, I'm sure this is still one of the better paydays on the NASCAR circuit. I mean, so let alone the prestige, the money that comes with winning here.
I wonder if there's going to be an SVG bump for ratings.
You know, I'm going to say no. I'm going to say no, but I think it's going to be a great race. I mean, even if it was just SVG coming back, I think this is going to be fun, just because, you know, you look at one, there are so many more good road course drivers now than there have been in previous generations of NASCAR drivers. I'm talking like full-time Cup Series drivers. And we've got a lot of really good road course people around the cut line.
Yeah.
You know, like we already mentioned Chase Elliott, who's got to win his way in.
McDowell.
Michael McDowell, you know, Allmendinger. We could see Ty Gibbs do something here. Yeah. These are even Daniel Suarez has won on a road course at Sonoma. Yeah. All these drivers are drivers who are looking to win their way in.
Yeah.
And then on the flip side, you've got guys like Bubba Wallace, who've spent the last several weeks running very well and accumulating enough points to create a buffer here for these next couple races where anything can happen. And, you know, Bubba Wallace better hope that there's not, you know, back-to-back surprise winners, or else, you know, Daytona becomes a winner-go-home situation. And he can win at Daytona because he's good super speedway racer, but that is not a position you want to be in. So there's just going to be drama throughout the field, and so many storylines to watch throughout the field here. So I'm really, really, really looking forward to this race. I'm just, like I said, I just really hope that the way that NASCAR polices this with no stage breaks now, I hope that doesn't lead to some sort of monotony. I want there to be a lot more action here.
All right, we got less than 5 minutes. So Tyler Reddick is the defending winner this season on road courses. Tyler Reddick, Martin Truex Jr., SVG, they're all in this race. Truex hasn't finished better than 15th in his first two starts on the Indy road course.
Okay.
So I'm giving you those three guys or the field. Who are you taking?
Gosh, it's so hard to go against SVG. I would take Tyler Reddick, but his right rear tire changer can't seem to get out of his own way. The pit issues with 2311 just in general are so concerning every week. It's so hard to go against SVG. It really is. But like, this is a road course race. It's not a street course race. I wonder if the distinction is enough to matter.
Well, he races on road courses too.
Yes. So, yeah. The supercars. Yes.
So, I mean, I don't think that'll be a problem for him.
You know, I'm going to go SVG. Why not?
Okay. Okay.
Back to back undefeated road course / street course racer. In the Cup Series, I'll go with SVG. Who are you taking? I assume the field.
I'm going to take Allmendinger. So,
and I could totally see that. I could absolutely see that. Man, what a missed opportunity it was a couple weeks ago with him having to race at Road America instead of. Ugh. Man, I hope that doesn't come back to bite them. But no, I could absolutely Allmendinger win it. There's plenty of drivers I could see win this race, and again, just because of what's at stake here, three races to go, anything could happen. So.
All right. Well, that will do it for this episode of Dropping the Hammer. John, thank you for getting the band back together for at least a week.
Yeah, for sure.
But this was fun.
Glad to be back.
So everyone can reach me at Dan McFadden on Twitter. Email me at dmcfadden@adgnewsroom.com. Please be nice. And John, where can they find you?
Anywhere online at John LaFillet, JonLaWFillet.
All right, and that'll do it. Thank you, guys. And I'll be back in some form next week to talk about the Indianapolis road course and then to preview Watkins Glen. So I will talk to you guys next week.